You are now listening to episode 33 of the official Dom J Radio Show. Let's go. Music for your consideration. You already know what it is, man. J. Cole dropped his album today, The Off Season, a lovely, lovely 12-piece project. Oh, shit. I'm playing it in the background. Y'all just heard a little bit of that Applying Pressure, you know what I'm saying? Probably my favorite track off of this whole joint, man. Applying Pressure, 100 Mil, Pride is the Devil. Those are my top three. Now, the entire album, you know what I'm saying? It's a complete body of work from start to finish. You really get to see the growth, the progression. And you're talking about years later from the warm-up, man. He went and had the L.A. Leakers freestyle, killing that 93 till infinity beat once again. And it's just classic Cole, man. I mean, what can we say? Except thank you. Thank you, Cole. So like I said, my standout tracks off the 12-piece special, you know what I'm saying? I got to go with Applying Pressure, 100 Mil, Pride is the Devil, sneaking them features on there because you'd have to look at the song credits to really find out who's on this joint. You know, that's how they do records and albums sometimes now, so you don't just go to the feature songs. You really get to the complete body of work. But we got a little baby feature in there. You know what I'm saying? On that Pride is the Devil. You'll probably hear that one on the radio if you haven't heard it on the radio already. I was hearing it this morning. Lil Baby's crushing everything he touches, so that's really no surprise. But I think if you're thinking from an audiophile standpoint, man, it's just a beautifully crafted album, Applying Pressure. Just, I think, is one of those that I put on my immediately put on my running back playlist, man. The songs that I got to listen to at least twice, three times over. Have to put that Applying Pressure on that. That 100 Mil, you know what I'm saying, when you're in that venture capitalist zone, if you will, just reflecting back on successes, reflecting on the struggle, the upcome. I think it's just a project that you can say, what? Is it a classic already? You could probably say it's a classic already. It's cool, man. I'm sure it was somebody downloaded it at midnight and at 12:01 was calling it a classic. So here I am sitting here in the morning, having some tea, doing my early morning moves, meditation and whatnot, getting the podcast ready for you guys. And I'm calling it a classic 8 hours later.
Thank you for listening to the official Dom J Radio Show. The channel features artistic originals, special guest features discussing education and culture, and my takes on the latest news and sports. Subscribe to official Dom J on WordPress and YouTube for more.
Big Time State of Mind, The Flight of the Pen. This is the beginning. There is no end of us. Thick as thieves, Robin Hood and friends, you are my tool, my fuel, that keeps them away at a distance, at bay. I crave you. I desire you. A day cannot go by. I can't stand to go through without you. You were by my side. You have been when I was in hell. You were there then. And when the best could no longer contest, you ignited a fire within my chest, my bosom, my breast, burst as you leapt and flashed your brilliant crest. You laid to rest, all the rest. You are above and beyond, of you I've become fond. As our two minds become one, we shared this bond. As we continue to go far, expanding this great repertoire, and as we expand their horizon, we bring their eyes in. Into the light, out of the dark, the sin. You are what I need. Without you, I neither sleep nor breathe. You represent innocence and bring nothing but pure bliss, casting away the lies, the ignorance, creating the power to make hearts skip beats, endowing the soul to do magnificent feats. You are you. You are, and you always have been, the tool of the writer. You are the pen. Big Time State of Mind, The Flight of the Pen. Big Time State of Mind, Grace and Mercy. Dear people, wake up. This is your early morning sunrise. This is your ticket to the new day. Wipe the sleep from your eyes. Do not use the Lord's name in vain, not here nor anywhere else on this planet. I've woken you up to pray. Yes, I decided I took the time out to plant it. As most of us do not say thank you for your mercy, thank you for your grace. We assume we will wake each day, that we deserve each day. Assume it's time to check Twitter, my face, or Facebook instead of thank you, Lord, for it not being last night my life you took. Make this note out or take it however you please. Just remember when your feet hit the floor, they should give way to your knees to say thank you. Waking up like, man, I hate today. When you should be thankful that the Lord sent you on your way. You could have faded out, faded into eternal and everlasting sleep, and the day would have gone on. Time wouldn't have skipped a beat. So it's a blessing that I'm sure many of us take for granted. I don't understand, but I don't have to. I'm not the one who planned it. I just say thank you, Lord, for I am forever in your debt. I just say thank you for each and every breath I have left. Lord, you make a way, so I'm telling your people here today, thank the Lord for his grace and mercy. This is all I have to say. Amen. Big time state of mind, grace and mercy. In sports, the NBA is winding down into its final few regular season games. You have the playoffs and the play-in games sort of getting ready to solidify those matchups. And my Lakers are struggling. They are struggling. LeBron is supposed to be coming back this weekend to try and get in a little bit of action before the season officially ends. Looking like the Lakers will most likely end up in the play-in tournament, unfortunately. And despite the disdain from LeBron James saying whoever came up with the idea needed to be fired, I think it's unfortunate. AD came back, had some monster games, got hurt again. And that's essentially, I don't want to say it, knocking on wood as I think about it, could be the story of my man's career, man. He's seemingly always battling injuries. And it's unfortunate because when he's in, he clearly shows you he's one of the best big men and one of the most skilled big men in the league when he's available. But the man is not always available. And damn it, is luckily, I ain't even tripping. Luckily, I ain't even tripping. Because it's going to cost me my fantasy basketball season, man. Now, my team was nice, bro. I had Jamal Murray, lost him to injury. Had AD, lost him for like 6 weeks. Due to injury. Had LaMelo Ball, bro. Balling. Oh, yeah. And you know what happened. You guessed it. Lost him to injury. Still made it to the championship round, man. But my team is getting smacked as the man across from me has like Sabonis, Steph Curry, and Russell Westbrook putting up stupid dumb numbers. So salute to my fantasy basketball league, to the winner. You got me, bro. You beat me out in this one. I'm coming back next year, and I'm picking more healthy players, bro. This was some bullshit, man. I'm low-key pissed about it. But I'm moving on. We also had the NFL schedule release. Not going to get into the individual team schedules. I'm sure all the fanboys and fangirls, you know what games you're trying to go to for your teams, respectively. As a ex-Broncos fan, because until they get a real quarterback, I don't give a damn what sort of roster moves they're making because they don't have a quarterback and are slated to lose probably more games now that since it's going to be a 17-game season, they'll get an extra loss in there because they don't have a quarterback. But I may end up seeing them in my backyard via Jacksonville playing the Broncos in week two. So might be at that game, might be rooting for, I don't know, the local team. Fuck that other team. One schedule I did want to highlight, definitely the ESPN Monday Night Football schedule. Got some good games on that joint. Kicking it off, Ravens Raiders taking the Ravens in that. Then you got the week after that, Lions and Green Bay. And Rodgers is seeming like he may or may not be the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. So who knows how that game goes. Maybe it doesn't even matter because the Lions are just typically terrible. No disrespect to the city of Detroit. Wonderful city. A lot of great music comes out of there. But your football team, not so much. Then you got a divisional matchup again with Philly and the Cowboys the week after that. Another divisional matchup, Raiders and Chargers. So the Raiders of Las Vegas have, in the first 4 weeks of the NFL season, two Monday night games. Week after that, You got Colts and Ravens. So there you go with the Ravens making two appearances in the first 5 weeks. Then you've got Bills, Titans, Saints, Seahawks, Giants, Kansas City, Chicago versus the Steelers, Rams and 49ers, Giants, Bucks, Seattle versus the Washington football team, Patriots versus the Bills, Rams, Cardinals, Vikings, Bears, Dolphins, Saints, which is a hella random matchup. But, you know, you got those cross-divisional opponents this year, and ending with the Browns and Steelers. So some really, really good games there. Packers and Rodgers in the home opener. That's interesting because, again, Aaron Rodgers may or may not be the quarterback of the team. Eagles and Cowboys, as you know, the NFC least, as the division is appropriately named, kicking off their matchups there. Tom Brady and the Bucks versus the Giants. The Giants, oddly enough, despite Daniel Jones having a sort of ineptitude from the quarterback position, the defense has been pretty tough, and they played the Bucks pretty tough for three quarters. But when you can't put up enough points, it ain't going to matter. But also, I think not on the Monday Night Football schedule, but a game everybody's going to be interested in. You're going to have Brady and the Bucks taking on the Patriots within the first 8 weeks of the season. So that's going to be a really good matchup to see what sort of things Bill Belichick tries to throw at old Tom Brady, since he let that man walk out the door and watch him win a Super Bowl ring. So that's going to be interesting. If I'm making way too early season predictions, I think the Ravens will come out on top of that division. The Bills will come out on top of their division. I think the Bucks, gonna be hard to not see them repeating. They brought back the majority of the pieces from the Super Bowl run, coaches and players included. So if I'm just making an overall NFC pick, that's who it's probably going to be. I'd like to say the Bills could somehow get past Kansas City, but it doesn't seem to matter whether it's regular season or postseason. They just can't seem to edge out the damn Chiefs. So I'm going to just reserve my AFC pick, because I ain't going to be picking somebody from that AFC West division outside of Mile High City to represent in that respect. In the NFC least division, I honestly think if Dak comes back and is healthy, the Cowboys should have a legitimate shot at winning that division. The Washington football team is going to make it tough because that defense is to be respected. I don't know what their quarterback situation is really going to look like, and so far as how that impacts the offense, we shall see. I think you'll have some good matchups coming out of the NFC West, which is, I still think, one of the two toughest divisions if I'm picking a winner out of that. I think by the time Trey Lance is ready to start for the 49ers, they could be in a pretty good position, and he could just take off. Out of all the young quarterbacks that were drafted and where they're at, Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence, I think it's great for the city. That Tim Tebow news is really just fluff, because I think he's washed, respectfully. I think Tim Tebow is washed, about to try and play a position he's never played before after spending 7+ years away from the game of football, playing baseball, this being a tight end job, and you formerly played quarterback. I'm like, okay, sure. A certain measure of privilege is obviously being afforded because he has the Urban Meyer Florida connection, which is cool if you know, hey, you're one of your own Braves, you know what I'm saying, need a little solid, and you could do that solid. I get it. But let's not act like it's anything other than that, okay? So I think that's a cool little story for them. The Jets took Zach Wilson second. I'm sure he's going to light it up in practice and be spectacular. Already hearing the praise from players that he's just a great dude. So it'll be interesting to see how he operates. And I hope Robert Saleh and the new coaching staff does have success. Do I see it happening immediately? No. But I think if they win 6 games this year, they should definitely be happy about the way that franchise is moving and the direction it's moving in. So that's good for them. Then you had, like I said, San Fran with Trey Lance. I think that's the best system with the best coaching, the best defense to boot out of all these situations, and a player who seems to be the most capable and ready starter once it's all said and done to take over and actually succeed, not just get out there to say, yeah, I'm out here. You had, unfortunately, the Bears taking, well, I suppose it's maybe not unfortunately, Fortunately, you had the Bears taking Justin Fields as he slipped past a couple teams who also needed a quarterback that will not be named. But in Chicago, it's like, that offensive line is Yes, Justin Fields is an athlete, but you know, people are going to have a short sort of leash if the success doesn't pan out earlier than sooner, if he's starting earlier than sooner. And I don't think that's going to be fault of his. I think it's going to come on that coaching staff and the player development. So we'll see. We'll see what they do, man. Chicago was aggressive moving, you know, to get him, moving back up to get Fields at 12 or 11, whichever one of those spots he was taking at. So that's cool. That shows that they really wanted him and valued him. But I just don't know if that coaching staff is going to be able to do right and bring out the best of him in his rookie season. Then you had Mac Jones, who all the smoke was on for possibly being taken as high as 3 because San Francisco traded the farm to move up to 3, going 15 to the Patriots. So basically, if you were putting lukewarm on the board, that was a pretty Bill Belichick move. He loves Alabama players. Mac Jones is the least athletic, biggest pocket passing QB that you could find out of the 5 QBs just mentioned. So it seems like a good fit there. Should be interesting to see. The Patriots spent a lot of money in the offseason addressing issues. In a season where obviously coming off of COVID and the cap being less, you'd have to spend more. In different seasons, Bill Belichick was like, fuck it, I'm going to go ahead and run up the budget now and come back comparable. So it should be interesting to see how the battle between Cam and Mac Jones plays. I think, is Cam going to stay healthy for 16 weeks? I don't know. So I think you'll probably end up seeing Mac Jones at some point. Will the Patriots overtake the Bills for that division again? I don't think so. So I think you can sort of rest assured in that sense. AFC North, I think the Ravens will take that division still. The Bengals have had a nice draft and offseason trying to get Joe Burrow some help. They got him Jamar Chase, which was a great move. Obviously, that connection there, some champions re-linking up, is a great move. And then they spent other picks addressing the offensive line, which was nice to see as well. But I think you have the Ravens come out on top. The Browns will still be respectable. We'll definitely be in that hunt again for the playoffs as well. So that'll be probably 2 teams you get out of that conference for the playoffs there. So that should be fun to watch. So should be an interesting NFL season, man. I think you had a lot of good pickups through the draft, a lot of reuniting wide receivers with quarterbacks. So building some chemistry from that perspective. Should be interesting to see who makes the leap and who makes the fall off. In other news, man, the census, as you know, everybody, it happened last year. If you didn't get counted, that's on you. You should have been definitely approached by some census counters. But I digress. I wanted to speak on some of the ramifications of the census. For the first time in 170 years of statehood, California is losing a congressional seat. And that's the result of slowed migration to the nation's most populous state, which was once a symbol of the country's expansive frontier. Oddly enough, Florida will gain 1 seat in Congress next year, growing from 27 to 28. Texas was the biggest winner, as the second most populous state added 2 congressional seats. North Carolina also picked up 1 seat. Other states losing seats include Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. The census release marks the official beginning of the once-a-decade redistricting battles. Now, you may be asking yourself, why is that important? And I believe it's important because, as you know, man, we have midterm elections coming right up around the corner in some odd, 16 to 18 months, something like that. So it's important to know. It's important to be aware of any changes that may be happening on your local level. If your zoning and redistricting has occurred already, you may need to check where you vote, man. They've passed a lot of bills in a number of states that impact people's ability to vote. So again, proper preparation prevents poor performance. Make sure you already are aware of where you need to be voting. I still think one of the best ways to ensure that you do get to vote is to vote early if you can. So I encourage everyone to be aware of when your local midterm elections are taking place, because again, man, don't let them catch you sleeping. They trying to do all kind of shady Jim Crow-esque type of bullshit. And we just not finna have it, man. We're not having it. So make sure y'all got your plans for voting next year, 2022. It's not just the presidential elections that matter. I say this seemingly all throughout the year because it's true. The local elections, who you're electing as your, you know, school board representatives, your police commissioner, your police chief, your mayor, those people matter way more than the president, man. That person is respectfully just a figurehead at the end of the day. Moving on. We did have progress in the Ahmaud Arbery case, the criminal case charging the three men in connection with the death of Ahmaud Arbery is the most significant civil rights prosecution undertaken to date by the Biden administration Justice Department. So, you know, we had, oddly enough, man, I think getting people on hate crimes, is it news? It is in America because it doesn't happen when it's so obvious. It just doesn't always correlate to it actually being a conviction. And so for this to be a clear hate crime, we have three people essentially stalking a man who was just trying to get some cardio in and then murdering said man for just being an existing, essentially. I think it was a little more of the clear-cut justice that we are sometimes expecting to see. So that was nice to see federal hate crime charges brought against all three of those people. So I think, you know what I'm saying, knowing that people are interfering with one's civil rights, attempting to kidnap a man just for, again, bro, really existing, just for being a person of color in this instance, a black man in this instance. So I like these moments where we can seemingly have some progress towards justice. I'm here for it. I'm always going to be here for it. So federal officials have moved quickly, trying to open sweeping investigations into troubled police departments as civil rights take center stage among the department's priorities. So from a federal level, the oversight, if you're thinking of a pyramid sort of scheme when you're talking about power, the federal, you know, Justice Department at that level being able to help disseminate and do some oversight, if you will, as one would expect a governing body to do, of local and state officials and how they've handled certain cases, I think that's pretty necessary in a lot of circumstances. Not to say that these people are showing themselves incompetent and showing themselves incompetent often, but if we're being honest, they are kind of showing themselves to be incompetent often. So a little oversight about people who can end people's lives is probably the right decision. But shh, idiots won't want to hear that. So in conjunction with the last segment, man, about the oversight and how it's sometimes necessary, one of the ways that we can continue to move in that sort of corrective direction is by passing the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. Some highlighted things from this act are that it ends qualified immunity, which means essentially we'll be able to hold police officers accountable. It can't just be some, oh, it happened within the confines of the job, so you can't persecute it from me. Nah, player. Hold it up a little bit. We're going to review this to make sure this conduct wasn't just an outright murder by someone with a badge. Seems pretty fair to me. It bans chokeholds and no-knock warrants, as we know, still wanting justice for Breonna Taylor. She lost her life as a result of a no-knock warrant. Chokeholds, we've seen numerous black people over the past, some odd 20 years insofar as the media coverage goes that have died at the result of illegal chokeholds across this nation. And it mandates training on a state, local, and federal level to combat racial profiling and discrimination. Now, I'm thinking I like that, as well as the other two aforementioned highlighted points from the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. And again, I think we're talking about some of the most stressful jobs, man. Some of the most life-altering jobs because of the field itself, just because of what you're, you know, in charge of doing in the sense of policing. We can go back to the historical implications of policing in general, and it's coming from the derogatory nature of slave catchers catching, you know, black escaped slaves and whatnot. But if we're thinking in the modern day aspect and how that is essentially just sort of morphed into, well, he's a police officer, so it must have been justified. Nah, that's not really gonna fly, I don't think, for our current generation, nor for the next generation behind us. So I'm for passing the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. I just think it's time for the U.S. to prioritize the meaning of actual justice. So that's something that I hope gets passed sooner rather than later. If you haven't read up on it, I would advise you read up on it, check into it, because again, I think if we're talking about making actual progress, actual, you know, steps towards a sort of justice in this country that makes sense for the times we are living in, then things like this are a great way of starting. Now in COVID news, we got that J&J back on the streets as expected. I think I talked about that on the last episode. You already know I had that illegal going on for a minute. You know what I'm saying? That exclusive. Couldn't even get that on the streets. But it's back on the streets now. And hey, man, they'll even let your kids get it. They won't let you get that J&J or that Moderna just yet. But the Pfizer COVID-19 shot has expanded to U.S. children as young as 12. So if you're into getting kids vaccinated, I know kids have to have a certain amount of shots for school. You know, I think it's like protected against the measles and maybe the bubonic plague or some shit like that. You may want to add the COVID-19 shot to that list. I don't know, man. I don't have kids, thank God. So I don't have to have this sort of discussion with my significant other as to the vaccination of the children's. But I think if you're in, you know, a situation where you have potentially kids with, you know, compromised immune systems or things of that nature, that it might be something you consider. But for those listening that may or may not have kids, what are your takes on vaccination ages continuing to drop? Currently, as we stand, I think we have about 46% of all Americans, some over 140 million people vaccinated, at least from the first dose. And some odd 117 million that are fully vaccinated. So I think we're trying to get to that point where, you know, we're making the continued steps to include more groups that obviously would have been initially excluded. And henceforth, you have the age drops from 65, 60, so on and so forth, to where everybody and their mama can get it now. So I think it's just a step in the right direction. If you're thinking from a scientific standpoint, some people may still feel it's rushed. I know that's the skepticism behind some people's wanting to get vaccinated in the first place, but if we're discussing free healthcare and how that can impact people in the time that it needs to impact them, this has kind of been what you would expect in that sort of situation. So the irony of supporting something and then contradicting it via actions is never. In other attention-worthy news, as you may or may not know, this past week or so, there's been a gas-related craze insofar as people doing what they do during pandemic and panic situations of hoarding things. The Colonial Pipeline, the biggest fuel pipeline in the U.S., delivering about 45% of what is consumed on the East Coast, was hit this past week by a cyber attack from hackers who lock up computer systems and demand a ransom to release it. You had states like Florida, of course, declaring a state of emergency in response to the gasoline shortages caused by the hack. And this executive order was signed by that asshat, activating the National Guard as need and directing state emergency management officials to work with federal and local officials. But I think unless they're about to be getting out to these gas pumps and regulating how much gas people were getting, I didn't really understand the need for a declaration of state of emergency, because the Colonial Pipeline was already in the works of having its systems back operable by the end of this week. Obviously, everything in the statement says it's not going to be back to 100%. But again, there was never the need for a declared state of emergency, because all that really does is incite more panic among idiots. And then you have people going out and buying up unnecessary gas when all they have to do is just buy their regular amount of gas, go about business as usual, and proceed accordingly. But that's just interesting, man, because you have pictures that are disseminating around the internet of people hoarding gas, using up gas cans, then turn around lighting cigarettes, setting the said car and themselves on fire, because, you know, that's kind of how that happens. And I think all of that sort of happens when people take information and use it in the wrong aspect. So if you were or were not impacted, it is perfectly reasonable because we're still having gas. I haven't had any issues getting gas around the city. It's pretty much been a non-issue, so to speak, here in North Florida. But if you're on the East Coast and you've had some troubles getting gas, where you at, man? And is it as crazy as they're making it seem? Because it's really seeming like an overbloated situation at the moment. And there you have it. Thank you for tuning in to episode 33 of the official Dom J Radio Show on whatever digital streaming platform you are using. Thank you. Please like, share, and subscribe to the show. Thank you for the support as it continues to help my efforts in growing the audience, reaching more people, having these beautiful conversations with you, all of the lovely listeners. So episode 33, Mayflowers of the official Dom J Radio Show. As always, in between time, in the meantime, I hope y'all are staying blessed, drinking plenty of water, and minding your business. Don't let them catch you sleeping, y'all. Stay woke. Until the next time. Peace.